This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
On the breakfast grill today, Dr. Michael Jayakumar, MP of Sungai Siput, as well as specialist in chest medicine, as well as Dr. Ashok Zachariah Philip, president of the Malaysian Medical Association. We're going to explore issues in healthcare today. Are there too many medical graduates? Is there enough healthcare funding? Will be among the issues that will be discussed. So, gentlemen, good morning. What is the demand and supply situation right now? On the one hand, we have state-of-the-art new hospitals, but certain departments are not operational. And on the other hand, there is a long line of medical graduates without jobs, and also nurses have a hard time looking for positions as well. Dr. Ashok, you're with the MMA. Let's start with you.
Thank you. The problem you mentioned of highly specialized hospitals with departments that are semi-functional or non-functional reflects the lack of specialists in government practice, because at present, right at the top, there's still a lot of vacancies, a lot of unfilled needs, whereas right at the bottom, where you've got the house officers and the junior medical officers, you've got a log jam almost, you know, there's so many of them that we are beginning to wonder how well they can be trained in the time available, given the resources available. So it's really a mismatch between what we need and what we have.
Dr. Jayakumar, what do you think of the quality of our medical qualifications? I mean, a lot of times it's an affordability decision whereby a lot of us can't afford overseas education that is arguably more higher quality. And so they end up in domestic educational institutions, which many times is a commercial entity.
I think there is a problem. And we cannot just say that the overseas graduates are better trained than the local, you know. There's a huge variation depending where they go. Those who go to Australia, for example, I think it's a very good system of education there. But those who end up going to Russia or, you know, Indonesia or Egypt, you get a wide variation. You get some of the good students who'll do well wherever they go. But the average students and the poor students sometimes do very badly in these places. And similarly, in Malaysia itself, we have 11 public colleges, and I think at the last count, 20 or 21 private colleges. And there is a variation in terms of training available. Because colleges have grown up very fast, and sometimes they have a problem with getting teaching staff, people who can teach.
So this is also a multifaceted issue, right? There is the idea of our government recognizing foreign degrees, and then there is also the quantity of local colleges. Do you think that the government should be a lot more stringent? What should be recognized and what shouldn't be?
I think the government's policies have been overlaid by commercial interests. There's no other way to explain how you have a sudden mushrooming. You know, we had a first medical school in the 60s, UM, then you had UKM, then you had USM. Then the last 10 years, suddenly you have an explosion of medical schools, you know, and that is a problem. I mean, we must grow our capacity, that is agreed. But it must be done in a planned way. You know, now we have grown, now we are coming out with 5,000 graduates every year, about half from Malaysian colleges and about half from overseas. And we are struggling to place them for training in hospitals. So I think it's unplanned, you know, growth, which has been driven more by commercial interests of the private colleges than by any national planning program, you know.
Dr. Ashok, what does the MMA think about this in terms of a solution that's being provided to this situation?
Well, we feel part of the problem is that there's a lack of unified direction at the top. The Ministry of Higher Education is deciding how many medical education programs there should be, and the end user is the Ministry of Health, and they're not getting enough input. Now, the Ministry of Health has proposed to expand or continue that moratorium on new medical programs, but the MMA feels that certain medical programs are perhaps financially struggling. And if they should fail, we don't think those licenses should be reissued. And we do not think that anyone who buys over that program should be allowed to use that license. We think if your program has failed, let it fail completely. we can do with a fewer colleges, and we can do with fewer medical graduates right now, to be very honest.
So you would actually cut the supply and you would reduce the number of colleges. How would you look at that from a commercial policy decision? A lot of these colleges, I guess, spend a lot of investment into them. Is that going to be reversed, and how will that impact a future, let's say, FDI decisions into Malaysia?
I'm not saying that we should take away licenses from people who are doing well, but there is no doubt that certain colleges are struggling financially. And if they do fold, that means that, in my view, the market has an oversupply of medical colleges, and therefore you shouldn't be reissuing that license. It'll be better for the others who are surviving if you don't. You know, they can do better.
I suppose it is right for public institution like the Ministry of Health or the Ministry of Higher Education to intervene where the quality is really substandard. And that's not a wrong policy from an investment viewpoint, right?
Yes, in fact, it's not only right from the investment viewpoint, it's also right from our right as citizens to receive quality healthcare. We need to have good quality right from the basic level, from entry into medical school onwards.
Now, Dr. Jayakumar, is there a failure in the structural aspects of policy here? Because why is the Ministry of Higher Education calling the shots? And something as crucial as this, why is the MOH not having a bigger say in the number of graduates?
Well, I can only speculate because I'm not within that system deciding this, you know. But it appears that very powerful commercial interests are actually influencing people in government to approve colleges, to approve quotas. And the people who are doing the approval don't seem to realize it's not just a question of training doctors in colleges. Doctors need a few years of guidance after graduating as house officers. They've got to have exposure, they have got to have training and guidance to become safe doctors. And if you just flood the system, you know, with thousands of doctors, then you're going to have problems. And especially because, you know, right now, we only have about one-third of the specialists in the country are in public service. Two-thirds are outside. And the people who are outside have very little contact with the new doctors coming into the system. So it's left to the one-third who are in government service. And of these one-third, a large number of them are fairly new specialists. Many of the older, more experienced specialists, the good clinicians, are outside. So, you know, you're giving a huge workload to the smaller group of specialists in government service to train an increasingly large number of house officers. I think right now there are about 10,000 house officers in government hospitals undergoing training, mm-hmm. whereas about, say, 10 years ago, it was maybe one-fifth that amount. You know, so I think we need more doctors. That's fair enough. But I think we've done it in an unplanned manner. We've expanded too fast, and the system's capacity to provide the training post-college has been breached. And so I'll echo what Dr. Ashok said. I think we've got to see how we can cut down the numbers. I think it would not be fair to do it retroactively. I mean, like those who have already taken a medical course, we can't say, no, we're not going to employ you, you know. But I think we've got to cut down, like, for example, if colleges go bust, we don't reissue their licenses. Maybe we should stop dual intakes. Some colleges have two intakes in a year. We can say, no, only one intake. We can maybe cut down the quotas by 20% across the board for the future, starting this year, you know. I think you've got to do those kind of things to make sure that the quality of doctors we produce are good, are safe for the Malaysians.
Dr. Ashok, in the opinion of the MMA, is this an area for compromise?
Public safety should not be compromised, but I quite understand, and in fact, I have also felt those pressures that Dr. Jayakumar is speaking about. When someone has gone and trained and stuck it out for 5 years and come back as a doctor, and then you find he's a bit deficient in some areas, what can you do? If you have the time, of course, you can guide him and improve. But if you don't have the time, as you very often don't have in these conditions, you might perhaps want to consider directing him to a non-clinical field, maybe admin or something. That is another field that the Ministry of Health is trying to do, alternative career development pathways. you know, get them off the patients and onto the desks.
Dr. Jayakumar, one thing about what's happening with the confluence of the private sector and the public sector is this notion of what we call regulatory capture, that senior civil servants have a future in a private sector. Do you think this is a problem and it negatively affects the kind of arm's length policy that can be made for healthcare?
I think it's a huge problem. Because, you know, if you look at many of the private colleges, you have people who are formerly the director generals in the health system or deputy director generals ending up as the chairpersons, you know, of these private colleges. And then when they go and ask for quotas, for example, courses, they do get it because they're working with their juniors in the service. So you do hear about things like, you know, a private college here getting an offshore program in Ukraine with three medical colleges and having their degrees recognized, when actually if you go directly to those three Ukrainian colleges, your degree is not recognized. But you go through this particular college in Malaysia and you go there, it is recognized. Okay, I mean, things like that are getting done. And the whole role of government in regulating seems to be undermined by the employment of senior government doctors and other civil servants in the colleges and institutions which are supposed to be regulated by the government.
Dr. Ashok, is there room for the MMA to actually help people from civil service to contribute to the medical industry as a whole? I mean, where do you draw the line on conflicts?
Well, I don't per se say that senior civil servants cannot continue to contribute with their expertise once they have reached the mandatory retirement age. Okay, because they are highly experienced, they've got a lot of expertise, and perhaps it'd be a waste just to let them sit at home and rot. But there must be clear policies, clear guidelines, and they shouldn't be able to cut corners and pull strings. You know, they should also follow all the rules and regulations that are there. They can contribute with their expertise, but they should not be able to contribute with their influence.
And, of course, talking about the private sector, the growth in terms of healthcare professionals and healthcare personnel has been very strong over the last few years, 3 to 4 times for the public sector. I guess the numbers are anywhere between 20 to 30,000 medical practitioners in the public sector. But in the private sector, it's half of that, thereabout. Is there a case to reduce the funding bill of the government of the public sector and privatize things, Dr. Jaya?
No, I think that's the wrong way to go, absolutely. I think right now, like I said earlier, we have only about one-third of the specialists in government sector, but about three-quarters of the admissions to hospital are in the government sector, you know? And that's a mismatch, really, you know? There are a lot of people going to government sector, but not enough specialists looking after them. So I think I would argue for increasing funding for government sector. Actually, what I've been asking for is a moratorium on the private sector. Don't allow the private sector to increase the hospital beds, either new hospitals or expansion of old hospitals. Don't allow that. So then you can retain the doctors you're training, the specialists in government sector, and improve that. Because right now in Malaysia, we have a private sector which has got a lot of specialists, you know, a lot of facilities, catering for only 1/4 of the inpatient load. And 3/4 are going to the government sector. And this brain drain is affecting the quality of service in the government sector and also affecting the quality of training of young doctors. So I think we've got to do something to slow the growth of the private sector and strengthen the government sector.
Now, where would the funding come from? Because if you look at the budget that's allocated to the health ministry, it's about $23 billion for 2016. And this covers almost 270,000 employees. I suppose a big part of this goes to the public hospitals, right? But another part of it goes to maintaining the ministry as well, operational expenditure. So will the doctors make as much money if they worked for the government?
I mean, of course, you go private sector, you make more money. I mean, there's, you know, but the whole issue is, I mean, it's a service for the people. And if you say 23 billion, our whole budget is about 280 billion, you know.
That's 10%, yeah.
Yeah, it's 10%. And the other thing you got to see is some of the privatization deals you've done with the government itself, for example, the 5 support services, they've been privatized. The procurement of medicine, for example, we had the last time we had what's called the general medical store, that's been privatized. The building of hospitals last time was by JKR, now it's been privatized to companies. All this privatization takes its burden on the $23 billion. Because if we do those things ourselves without privatizing it, the government does it itself, it'd be cheaper. It's because you privatize to these various companies, which are often very well politically connected, they make money. So the $23 billion is not going straight for health, you know. A certain significant portion of it is going as super profits of privatized previously, you know, government entities privatized now to do certain functions. And a fair part of that $23 billion goes to them.
Yeah.
So that's a great question as well.
What kind of view does MMA take on that? Do they focus on public service or is it more of market-driven principles to maximize income?
Yeah, but people who go into medicine nowadays are a mixed bag. Some of them are real idealists and some of them think that's where the money is. So the Ministry of Health, I think, recognizes that the present situation is not tenable in the long term. More and more money is being spent on the operational and less on development, and that can't go on. In order to retain specialists, I believe they allow in many hospitals specialists to do limited private practice, a few hours a week, so that they get a side income as well. I'm not sure how successful that is, and I'm not sure that all specialists are interested in doing limited private practice. They may just want to be their own bosses, you know. Because what Dr. Jayakumar did not mention is that among those specialists who are in public sector, the more experienced you are, the less likely you are to be doing clinical work. You'll be stuck behind your desk doing admin, which is not what you signed up for, you know. I don't like doing paperwork, and I think most senior specialists would rather be seeing patients than doing paperwork. And yet, because they're head of department, they're stuck doing this. So there's a lot of potential for change. And I know that there have been so many studies over the past 2 decades about how to change our healthcare system. But every proposal has risks and drawbacks, and the political will to make change has not been there.
So the end result of what you're saying, Dr. Ashok, is the lure of the private sector. Dr. Jay, is there a solution here? How do we balance the private sector versus public sector conundrum?
Talking about funding, I think you've got to take the view of a social contract. If you look at Malaysia, we're having a fairly low wage policy because if we raise our wages too high, our products will be uncompetitive in the world market. So we're keeping our wages quite low. Minimum wage is only in, what, $900, not going to $1,000. So that means we've got to look at ways in which we can give what we call social wages. We can give subsidized basic needs, whether it's transport, whether it's education, healthcare. So it's a way in which we can share the wealth of our country with the poorer half of our population. So it's a social philosophy, is it? So you cannot say, oh, you must pay for your healthcare, it's too expensive, we can't pay for you. Because we are asking the poorer people in this country to sacrifice for a suboptimal minimum wage because in the interest of our economic success.
Mm-hmm. Because you're arguing for less privatization, though, in the face of the lure and the attraction of these doctors going into the private sector. I think even if the allocation from the government were raised, it's probably not going to be enough to incentivize doctors to stay in the public sector, right?
I think our approach has got certain big problems, you know. I mean, why are we getting people to study medicine? Is it so that they can then become the upper middle class and earn tons of money? Is that the main thing? Or they can emigrate overseas and get a good job in Australia and New Zealand? Or are we training people to become doctors and engineers and teachers to serve our population? If the second is the main idea, then we should subsidize the education. We shouldn't say you pay, you know, $300,000 or $500,000 to become a doctor. And then after that, after the family has mortgaged their house and taken loans to pay for the medical bills, say, okay, you go and work in Kapit or you go and work in Greek. That guy is going to say, why should I do that?
Absolutely.
I've bought my education at the market price and I want to work in KL. I want to specialize fast. I want to go overseas. And you can't hold him. But if you want to train doctors to go and work in rural Sarawak and rural Kelantan and, you know, to serve at least for a certain number of years, then we should then subsidize the education and say, then tell every graduate, look, the society has trained you, has made you what you are. Now please go and serve society. And I think people will feel the moral imperative to go and do that. I think we're very clear on that. We're getting it more and more commercialized. We're asking people to pay for the education. And they come out with huge student loans. Their families are in debt. Then how do you expect any social service and, you know, to come from them? You're asking them to be saints, you know? I think asking for too much.
Gentlemen, talking about high-priced medicine, there is this move right now to separate dispensing and diagnosis. Dr. Asher, I'll start with you. What is the MMA's position on this?
We believe that right now in the private sector, the time is not right. Because if you do separate dispensing and the doctor's diagnosis, what it means is you go see your doctor, and then after you've got the diagnosis, then you take your prescription and go somewhere else to a pharmacy, see the pharmacist, get the medicine. This will inevitably increase inconvenience, time spent, and money spent.
Is it just a matter of inconvenience, or is there also rice bowl factor there, that this is protecting the rice bowl of the doctors?
I think right now what the doctors, the general practitioners do is to cross-subsidize. They reduce their consultation and then they make some money on the drugs. So if they don't dispense drugs, then obviously they will increase the consultation. So I think either way, their income will remain about the same, but the amount the patient pays will go up.
Dr. Jaya, what do you think?
I think it's a turf war, really. I mean, you know, and PSM, we don't really support privatized medicine. You know, we think medicine is a right of our citizens, mm-hmm. and we should provide it. And these issues of different groups of health professionals fighting for the turf comes when you have a privatized system where they're fighting to make the incomes. I think so. We're not for it. I'm not for the whole system this way. We think healthcare should be something that people are given at subsidized prices.
Well, you have a lot of people who studied pharmacy. In fact, the Malaysian Pharmaceutical Society has argued that Malaysia has reached a stage where we have enough pharmacists to fulfill the World Health Organization numbers. One pharmacist for every 2,000 people in Malaysia. So is that support for going for separation because you have enough pharmacies to deal with prescriptions?
I think you'll have geographical problems. I think in urban centres, you know, I think like in PJ, in KL, you know, if you get the proper system in, you could have enough pharmacies open 24 hours to cover the needs. But I think in the smaller towns, even in Selangor, in smaller towns, would you be able to find a pharmacist open after office hours? So that could lead to a delay in getting medications.
Some ideas for example, communal pharmacies have been suggested so that the doctors can make some income from prescription as well. What does MMA think of this? Should the income of doctors be purely from diagnosis, or should there be a mixture of incomes?
Ideally, the income should be from their professional fees. That means for consultation, for procedures. That should be the way. But if you want to have healthcare 24 hours, then you have to make sure there are enough 24-hour pharmacies open. I mean, we have had discussions, and sometimes I've heard the pharmacies say, well, okay, you know, after office hours, you can dispense the drugs until the next day. I mean, that's like saying, you know, we don't want to work so long, you do the hard work and we'll take the money. So like Dr. Jayakumar says, it does have the appearance of a turf war sometimes. But we do have to consider the convenience and the needs of the patients. We have this dual system, private and public. So when we have that, we have to make sure that at least on the private side, there is enough, there's convenience for the patients for what they're paying.
Thank you very much for your time, gentlemen. And that was Dr. Michael Jayakumar, MP for Sungai Siput, representing PSM as well as a specialist in chest medicine. And also Dr. Ashok Zachariah Philip, president of the Malaysian Medical Association. We have been discussing issues in the medical industry and healthcare on this morning's Breakfast Grill, BFM 89.9.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.